Hey, it's 10:30, June Kales, and welcome. Just to remind about the call, you know, don't put your microphone on mute when you're not speaking, but don't put us on hold because all we can hear is your music and then we can't hear anyone else. So when you speak or ask a question or make a comment, just identify yourself and your name and your organization and where you might be in California or the country. And let's see, our next call is on April 9th. It's a topic call. The topic is yet to be confirmed, but we've got a couple things in the pipeline. And the call after that's on April 30th, same as this, a strategy and a briefing call. So on our agenda today, I'm going to rearrange things a little bit. Vance, are you on yet? Okay, Vance had limited
time. Hey,
you are there. Okay,
I'm
great.
Jim.
Vance, I'm going to... on your request, you go first because you need to drop off. So it's go ahead.
Thanks, Jen. Appreciate it. Thanks for organizing the call. I'm not sure who's on the line if everybody already did there.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad, Vance. Let me just let's just do a quick intro. I forgot. Thanks for the reminder. Go ahead and start with if your cameras are on, you guys go first. Christina, is that you? Unmute.
It is me. I was going to let my fellow friend, Deb, say hi before me. Hi, good morning. It's Christina Mills from CFILC.
Okay, and good morning. It's June Kales from helping out with this Disaster Coalition call.
Having people introduce themselves?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, it's Debbie Kaplan. Good morning, everybody. It's so good to see faces.
Okay.
Hello, this is go ahead. Brian from Freed in Grass Valley.
Anissa Escobedo with Tri-County Independent Living, TCIL.
Tri-County is where? What area?
Humboldt County.
Thank you.
Fiona Hensy, Independent Living Resource Center in San Francisco.
Thank you.
Dexon Houghton with the Area Agency on Aging, Area 4 here in Sacramento.
Got a lot more people on the phone, so go ahead.
Brittany Goldhorn, Californians for Disability Rights, calling from Riverside County.
And your name? CDR, your name?
Ruthie Goldhorn, calling from Riverside County.
Okay, thank you.
June, this is Christine. I just want to let you know in the chat box, we have Joe from RAL in Sacramento joining.
Great, thank you.
This is Roxy Crawford, FEMA Region 9 Disability Integration Specialist.
Welcome. All right, back to you, Vance. Go ahead.
All right, thanks. So, I'm going to be obviously heavy on the COVID-19. I think that's the major area of focus everybody's concerned about. Certainly, Calamia, that's where, you know, all of our efforts and energies are really at right now. And we continue to see on a day by day, even oftentimes, just a couple hours, everything seems to kind of change and update. Everybody knows there's a directive that everybody's to shelter in place. I think we're all very clear on who the most vulnerable individuals are when it comes to COVID-19. That's anybody 16 and above, anybody with an underlying medical condition or health concern, which, of course, means people with intellectual needs, get put right square up in the middle of that. I just want to check. Can you hear me, Jane?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great.
You're good.
But the line went quiet, so I got nervous. In terms of numbers, let me give you a breakdown, and these are changing. You know, the latest numbers we have show that, that worldwide, that this is continuing to grow. FEMA's reporting that there are 54,622 COVID cases in the U.S. And depending on the report that you're going to see, the number of fatalities is anywhere from 749 to just over 1,000 fatalities in the U.S. So that's one of the challenges that we have with all of this, is that there's the World Health Organization, there's the CDC, and there's about five other sources that, that put out numbers. And depending on the time of day, because they put them out, they're all different. All of them, however, point to the same fact, which is that this is growing, but very rapidly. So for anybody, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but for anybody who is not taking this 100% serious, I implore you to do so. If you can stay at home, stay at home. If you can avoid going out, avoid going out. This is meant missing family activities, special events, you know, birthday parties, weddings, whatever it be. And that's just going to have to be the case. This idea that you can shelter in place, but still have with your extended family every week, just is not responsible. So I just want to implore everybody to, not just for themselves, but to understand that message.
This is Dree. I'll have a question when we're done with your presentation.
Yes, excellent. Let me just, I'll go through the briefing and then have an answer or try to answer whatever questions you might have. In terms of the work that's happening at the State Operations Center, we've got, you know, every state agency essentially represented. We've got people that are working in the SOC or plugged into the SOC remotely as I am, and dispersed throughout the field. There are 14 different task forces that have been set up, but the four that are most specific when it comes to AFN-specific concerns, there's one on crisis communication. So we're working to ensure that communication is effective, that things get interpreted, that messaging is inclusive of everyone, that things go in multilingual formats. This, as you can imagine, is an extraordinary lift when you've got 50 different counties, 400 plus cities, however many plus agencies, all putting out their own info, trying to do that in a coordinated form and fashion. There's a lift, but we're doing what we can there, and I think pretty successfully. The second task force is housing and social services. We're looking to do everything from make sure that individuals who are in homeless encampments are being triaged and placed in the hotels. Our list there, of course, is to make sure that individuals with disabilities who fall into that category receive priority placement at hotels, because while trailers are being made available, those trailers just aren't accessible. So hotels are the best option for those individuals. And that guidance is going out to the counties. Also, as we look to set up shelters, it's that notion of ensuring that we do what we always do, which is have physical and programmatic accessibility, right? Integrated shelter environments, with full wraparound services. We've got a task force on public health and medical, and you know, that's looking at things like the healthcare surge capacity, right? Look at the number of beds we have, where we're going to and how we're going to fill those gaps. Look at setting up mobile field hospitals, and of course, everything that's required to make that a workable solution for people with disabilities. And then we've got a task force on volunteers and philanthropy. And the key there is we've got, you know, over 5 million seniors, let alone people with disabilities, who are sheltered in place. Then they get cut off, not just from their support networks, but also things like grocery shopping, right? Dog walking. We've got people who, while they've got power and connectivity, may not know how to reach out. And so how do we check on them in a way that doesn't put them at higher risk by exposing them to other people? So it's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving parts. Rather than kind of drone on and on, I'm happy to turn it over for questions.
Okay, I'd like to try something a little new here. In your participant list, if you click on that, which is at the bottom of your screen, for those of you who can see on the screen, just if you have a question, just click raise your hand, which is a little button under the participant list.
And June, this is Megan. If you're joining by the phone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand as well.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a question from phone number ending in 8150.
Hi, this is Ruth. That's my number. I have a few questions. What do you know about the hospital ship and the accessibility on the ship for patient rooms, restrooms, that sort of thing? That's one question. Another question
Ruthie, you're kind of sounding like you're underwater. But try that question again. I think it was about the ship in L.A.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Try it again.
That's correct. The hospital ship and its accessibility as far as the patient rooms and the bathrooms.
Okay, let's
air ground.
Okay, hang on. Let's take that first question.
I'm gonna change room and see. Okay. Yeah, and I'm going to change rooms and see in my house. I don't know why we've been calling for a year. So let me change rooms and hopefully you'll be able to hear me better.
No, we'll come back to you. Brian?
Okay.
Hello, this is Brian from Freed in Grass Valley. I apologize if this question is redundant. I was having some technical problems. So if it is a redundant question, then we can just move on. Vance, is it safe to say that the hospitals in California are at capacity or over capacity, and that is and I heard something about field hospitals. So are they overwhelmed at this point and not able to serve everybody that needs to be served? Over.
That's a great question, Brian. And thank you for asking. Let me be clear about that. We're not at that point right now. Right, the healthcare capacity of the state has not been overwhelmed. What we're looking at is 15, 30, 60, 90 days out and ramping up. The hope is that people are going to shelter in place and that's going to flatten the curve. But we have to plan for the worst case scenario. And so that's why all of these plans are being put together. That's why we're ordering a billion gloves and 500 million N95 masks and all these resources. It's so that if we reach that point, we'll be ready for it, because we can't prepare for it once we're overwhelmed. So the resources just won't come. We're seeing that in New York. We've got FEMA on board, which is great. They're helping their disability integration team. They're supporting us in our efforts as well. And so there's a lot of support there. But to answer your question, no, the healthcare system, as of today, has not been overwhelmed.
Thank you for answering that, Vance. And secondly, how are you holding up?
Oh, thanks. That's good. We're at it. This is a different type of event. Most of what we deal with is typically confined to a relatively small geographic location. This is, of course, statewide, nationwide, worldwide. But we're keeping at it. And we appreciate our partners. We know this is something that everybody is working on, all the independent women centers, all the CBOs, but been so active. And we appreciated that partnership.
Thank you, Vance.
Okay, thank you. Just a reminder, if you're on the phone, I think you can raise your hand by pressing Megan. Is it star 6?
It's star 9 to raise your hand.
Nine. And then if you're on the computer, is just go into the participant list and click raise your hand. So back to Ruthie's question, Vance, are you the one that can answer that about the accessibility features on the ship docking in LA Harbor?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of specific details about the accessibility of the ship, other than to say that I know that cruise ships tend to have features to them. But I don't have any of the specific specs on that.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And hopefully your reception here is better. This is Ruthie. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
And hear me? Yeah. Okay. My other question, again, going back to the field hospital, they're in the process of establishing the field hospital in India on the fairground. So, as explained, that is a forward-thinking establishing of that facility. So, I imagine that all of the AFN and all of the accessibility requirements are on their checklist, which is good. My other question is, Riverside County is where the virus cases are. They're citing HIPAA. San Bernardino County is, yes.
You're breaking up now and then. We'll try it one more time.
Okay.
If I stop you, put your, you can't.
Okay,
keep going.
So Riverside County is citing HIPAA and not revealing where the virus cases are, so that the cities can make plans and make sure that they're coming out properly. San Bernardino County is only identifying by region, and the City of Ontario just sent San Bernardino Records Act request.
Ruthie, I'm going to have to stop you because you are breaking up. Can you just really briefly, in a sentence, slowly, just state your question, because we're not getting it all.
Identifying exactly the case, not by region, by city, is what is needed.
Ruthie, this is Christina at Giovassi. Are you asking, is there a list someplace where you can go to see what is needed, city or county by county? Is that what you said?
No, I want to know if the county is refusing to release that information, and the city of Ontario has served the county of San Bernardino with a Public Records Act request to find out where the cases are active so that they can respond appropriately. And I didn't know whether or not, Vance, your office can help these counties and say and help them disclose. And yes, you do have to say where these are, and it's not a HIPAA violation as Riverside County says it is. Thank you.
Okay, so I think I got the question. I think you're wanting to know on a city by city basis who has reported cases, correct?
Why counties are not revealing those.
Okay. What I've seen a breakdown of counties, but I've not seen a city by city breakdown. So I can inquire about that. But I know that you could find a county by county breakdown.
Yeah, LA County is disclosing exactly where, and here in my areas, they're not, and everyone is very concerned.
Sometimes we end up with 50 counties and 58 different ways of doing things, but I can find out if there's maybe a centralized resource that outlines all that.
Vance, do you want to end by talking about your call that you hold on Thursdays? And also, just one last question about the mobile field hospitals. I know that past administrations defunded the three mobile hospitals that we did have. So the three that you know are the ones you're now talking about. Are those FEMA-led, or are those a reinstitution of what California once had and defunded?
So California is doing a lot of things. There's two actual brick-and-mortar hospitals that we're looking to stand up. And by that, I mean resources and fill with medical personnel. Again, these are brick-and-mortar actual hospital buildings. And then looking at things like, ARCA Arena or Sleep Train, I guess, Arena, using that as a hospital environment. So there's a lot of different plans on the table that are being prepared for. And some of those, Jim, may be ones that were previously funded that are no longer funded. I'm not sure. But the idea is essentially to look and say, where's a place like ARCA Arena that we can set up a hospital inside of it? And where's a building that we can use as an actual hospital? So that's what we're doing to be able to meet the surge capacity that modeling says may be necessary.
Thank you. And
right now, statewide, you've got 3,000 people plus that have COVID-19. And you've got just over 60 fatalities in the state. So we are seeing the numbers go up.
Okay, and any information about your call this afternoon? Or is that this afternoon?
Yeah, we do a leadership call Thursday afternoons.
Okay.
I'm going to make those, we do a Q&A as well. I'm going to make those questions available to you.
And Vance, I would just say on your behalf that you do take questions by email, and you're good at sending the answers out. So just remind people they can send questions by email to Vance, and he can forward them to the right State Department.
Always. So. Thank you. One of the things that would be helpful for me, Janet, if I might decide to step off, just you know, if people are seeing needs that we haven't identified, right, just let me know. Sometimes we feel like we're planning for every contingency and then we realize, oh my gosh, nobody thought about X, Y, or Z. So it's whatever you can do to inform our process would be tremendously helpful. If there are things that you're working on that we can support in some way, we obviously want to do that as well. We always say things like one team, one fight, and I think sometimes we just kind of say it and people hear it so often it becomes almost trite, but the reality is, and we're seeing this, that there's no city or county or state agency or single organization that has the capacity to deal with this. This is a all hands on deck scenario that we've never had before of any of our lifetimes. So everybody's role is significant, and we appreciate your support, and we want to support your efforts. So, as June said, my email box is always ready, open for messages, or text me, call me, for either to get a hold of.
Thanks, Vance. Stay safe. And we're going to move on to following the agenda. And Roxanne Crawford, who's the Regional Integration Specialist, FEMA. Roxanne, over to you.
Hey, good morning. This is Roxy. As June said, I'm the Region 9 FEMA Disability Integration Specialist. So today, I just wanted to talk some about the FEMA Disaster Declaration for the state of California. Kind of what that means and what it currently includes. So I know everyone's heard that FEMA is the lead agency for this response, but that can be confusing for what it actually implies. FEMA's main role in this event is to coordinate federal resources and financial support to the states and tribes who receive emergency and disaster declarations. So the coordination of federal resources, you know, in plain English, it relates specifically in the response to COVID-19 to like the distribution of personal protective equipment, PPE, and support to states who are setting up federal medical facilities, care facilities, medical related like operations, and like really anything that requires money or resources. FEMA has the ability to ask for help from other federal agencies and getting these things done quickly. So FEMA is the lead coordinating agency for the other agencies who are working on this response. But as always, as a federal entity, as a federal agency, we are here to support the state's efforts. So in disability integration specifically, you know, we are participating in task force groups set to determine how programs and benefits will be administered and how resources will be allocated and distributed. We're working with Vance, who just spoke, Access and Functional Needs Chief for California Office of Emergency Services and his teams to provide recommendations for gaps and shortfalls that we may identify. So that being said, the state of California requested and received a major disaster declaration, but the disaster declaration looks different than what you usually see with FEMA. So the state asked for the whole package when it comes to FEMA individual assistance programs. And individual assistance are the disaster programs which help individual people and families affected by disasters. But in looking at the FEMA programs, the ways they're typically administered, it's not really a possibility to have the whole host of FEMA programs like sheltering, well, temporary sh- sheltering assistance, like in the hotels and housing. In a typical FEMA declaration, the first question that's asked is if your home was damaged by the event. And that's how most individual assistance grant funding is determined, personal property and your home based on damage and displacement from a disaster event. And the FEMA programs don't serve all aspects of the community, which are currently being impacted. People, like an example would be people who are homeless. So in the instance of homeless individuals, the state of California is working on a number of initiatives to support the homeless community. Vance is very active in that group. There's a number of task force and groups that Vance and his team and my one deployed person dedicated solely to California, who we'll talk about later, are working with. But I'm going to let them speak to those groups in a minute. I did want to touch on one aspect of the individual assistance declaration, which is the only funding approved in relation to individuals and households, and that is crisis counseling. So right now, in crisis counseling, the state is having meetings with SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, to determine specifically how crisis counseling is going to be delivered in the state. So they're working on the grant application for how California wants to have crisis counseling available to residents. So while FEMA funds the operation, we don't really have much to do with its actual delivery. That being said, I have sent up the FEMA chain, my people working in these task forces and groups, accessibility recommendations to ensure that most likely all the crisis counseling, which is most likely going to be all virtual support, is done and messaged in an accessible and inclusive way. So I'm going to read to you the recommendations that I sent up and ask if you have additional recommendations that we kind of walk through those things. Demonstrating the ability to provide physical program and effective communications access for people with disabilities in all parts of the program, crisis counseling, in accordance with federal civil rights laws, just off the top, overhead. Accommodations that have to be planned and budgeted for would include access to qualified sign language interpreters and video remote interpreting, the ability to provide documents in alternate formats, including accessible electronic formats, braille documents, audio formats, large print, and other languages. This one I'm not sure about because I don't think that they're going to have the crisis counseling available outside of virtual support, but I want to make sure it's included in case this changes, because as we can see, it's an ever-changing event, and you know, we wouldn't want to exclude anything from contracting that might benefit down the road. So assisted listening devices and other communications equipment for people with hearing loss but who don't use sign language, training for staff on use of accessible communications equipment and telephone relay services, have a plan for accessible public information and messaging, demonstrate the ability to provide training on disability topics.
Hello.
Yes?
Keep going.
Sorry. Demonstrate the ability to provide training on disability topics. So some of those larger bullets have a breakdown of more detailed information, and I can send that list out to the group. What I would love is if people have additional recommendations that they can please add them. I just got a call invite for tomorrow this morning, so it is pretty short notice, but if you have other things, if you could take a moment and add them. I had one more bullet at the bottom. Demonstrate an understanding of and experience in locating and facilitating the resources and services that support people with disabilities on a daily basis. So these recommendations, there's minor adjustments to them, but for the most part, they're the recommendations that we send up every time that crisis counseling is being activated. My submitting the recommendations doesn't mean they'll be included, but we have a better chance of ensuring accessibility. We raise the concerns, and if we provide very specific ideas to be included in that grant application. I'll send this out after the call, and if people have additions, please send them up.
The call invite, the call is tomorrow, and I got the invite this morning, kind of how it works, I guess. Outside of crisis counseling, which is, of course, still in the process of deciding what it's going to look like for the state of California, there is a disaster distress line funded by FEMA and administered by SAMHSA that is open 24 hours a day, and they're able to provide support in many languages and via text. They have TTY number, and they specifically state on their website that you can use 711 and relay services to connect. I can also send that phone number out to everyone after this call. There's a lot going on in all of the states that I'm supporting. I'm supporting California, Nevada, Arizona, Hawaii, the territories of Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands, Guam, American Samoa, and we also have 75 individual tribal declarations. That being said, that's a lot for one person, and I didn't feel like I could give the full-time support that California needs and deserves. So I asked for help, and I asked for someone to be deployed virtually to participate in all the California task forces and activities. Charlotte Lewis was deployed virtually. I did specifically request Charlotte rather than allowing the system to randomly choose for me. I selected Charlotte because of her willingness to push the envelope with regards to red tape and bureaucracy, and her ability to get things done despite the extraordinary challenges she's faced many times leading disability integration responses. I find her to be thoughtful and supportive, and in just the 2 days that she has been deployed for the state of California, she's already plugging in and doing a great job at getting embedded in the California operations and with Vance's team. So I wanted to introduce Charlotte to all of you and invited her to join this call. You can see she was added to the agenda because I want her to brief out. I know Vance already talked a lot about the operations in California, so she may not have as much to add today. I'm not sure. But she's going to give you some FEMA California-specific activities. But first, I want to ask if there's any questions for me about crisis counseling or FEMA's participation in this disaster declaration.
Yes, just a reminder to raise your hand by clicking under the participant list or *9 on your phone. And Roxy, seeing none yet, two questions for you. One, under your crisis counseling communication list, our experience responding over many disasters in the past is that, disability experience and understanding the complexity and nuances of living with disability comes from locals, comes from contracts with people who live in California. And that expertise is really not something you can just import. So like in past efforts to get that integrated into case management contracts, if you could strengthen that language about contracting within the state using organizations who really know disability and know the resources to refer people to, I think that would strengthen that request a bit. And the other question for you is, there are many people out here using personal attendance, and there still seem to be issues around them getting personal protective equipment and masks. And maybe Christina from CFILC will answer that a little bit later. But on your end, anything about those two issues before you hand it to Charlotte would be good, helpful.
Awesome. Okay, so what I'm hearing you saying is to strengthen the language about, I'm going to open up my email with the list of things. When we're talking about understanding and experience and locating resources and in working with people with disabilities, I should strengthen the language on that to include the disability experience and understanding the complex nuances of disabilities comes from local, and that we do contracts within the state through organizations who know people with disabilities and the disabilities and the state specifically to understand how to best serve the people here. Is that correct?
You got it.
Awesome. I will add that language. And in terms of personal, the PPE for home health care, that's something I can try to follow up on. I know that there have been a number of resource requests coming through. Who exactly are these? Would the requests be coming from individuals or from organizations who have the individuals working for them? Like, are they home health care through a hospital or a home health care service?
Christina, do you want to take that?
Yeah, Roxy, that's a good question. This is Christina from CFILC. What we're referring to is mostly personal assistant services that are often called caregivers, and are working in people's homes to fulfill their daily needs, from a range of domestic services to personal services. And so we're seeing some folks around the state not have their caregivers, their personal assistants show up because they're worried about getting COVID-19 or passing it on. There's both sides of that. And then some counties do have backup registries. Some counties don't. The system is run through what is called public authorities. So each county has an established public authority, and each public authority is somewhat has an infrastructure to provide referrals for caregiving. And there's a whole process that an IHSS in-home support service provider goes through in order to become paid by the county and state and feds as an IHSS provider. So we're hearing those stories across the state. And the bigger issue that we're concerned about and have been doing a lot of policy work on is around who's going to be available eventually to back up personal assistance services. If the caregivers continue to be impacted at the numbers we see across the state increasing, what is our plan to make sure that there's backup support for those that are independent now and otherwise wouldn't need to go to the hospital or into a facility? And we know of at least three situations across the state where, because caregivers did not show up for their duties, the consumers, people with disabilities, including older adults, chose to call 911 because they literally could not get out of bed without their caregiver. And so we're trying to be as proactive as possible and look for ways to mitigate the problem before it continuously grows to a way to an unbelievable amount of stress and impact people with disabilities in a variety of different ways. It will escalate gigantically if we don't do something now.
Okay. So it's like a multi-tiered concern. So there's a concern that some of the caregivers are not showing up because they don't have access to PPE, and they're worried about either giving it to the person that they are caring for or getting COVID from the person they're caring for. And then also healthcare workers providing these services potentially being ill or not being able to show up at all anymore, not just because of PPE, but because of other reasons. And is there a backup plan for those caregivers? Is that correct?
Somewhat. Frankly, I don't know about how the home healthcare services works. I only know how in-home support services work. So they're both a little bit different. They're paid differently and have a whole different set of rules in each. So what I'm referring to is just the public in-home support services programs, as well as some of the out-of-pocket pay options that folks do. Like myself, I don't qualify for a public program, but I do pay out-of-pocket for the personal assistance that I need.
Okay, so let me give just one moment while I kind of catch up my notes. Okay, so.
But really, we're looking for, like, you know, I would love to see if FEMA could at least start to have the conversation about what do we do for backup caregivers support that's going to be needed across the country and in California already. I'm sure it's happening in New York as well. I just haven't stayed up to date on what they're doing out there. But figuring out, is there some sort of mechanism or support that FEMA can provide? You know, I've seen the National Guard come in and assist on a variety of different levels. Is there going to be such availability from the National Guard or some other entity to provide some backup caregiving support if it comes to that.
And Roxy, okay. This June, I want to add to what Christina asked. You know, in the past, FEMA does have a federal, personal assistant contracting service available. In the past, many states have not wanted to use it because of the expense and the 25% match.
I think also outside of just the expense part of it, I think what we've seen is that contract just really does not have the capability to provide the support that it's intended to provide. And so, my concern would be that, especially in a time like now where healthcare workers are so maxed out, it would be really difficult to activate that contract and actually have it be useful. I think we also see the background checks and people having to go through the system taking such a long time that by the time the contract is actually usable, it's not really needed. But that may not be the case here. So it's definitely something, I'm going to raise it, but because Charlotte is specifically working with California, I'm going to work with Charlotte to raise these concerns and try to find out if there's any types of either answers or at least some provision for progress saying this is a referral for you or this is a reference or, just try to get you some sort of information at least.
Thank you, both Charlotte and Roxy. And I'll just add that the same challenges that you're talking about in terms of background checks and all, that is consistent with what it takes to also become an in-home support service provider in California as well. And we're doing some advocacy to eliminate that at certain tier levels in order to get backup support in place.
Wow, that's good because it is really a kind of a stopper in the progress of getting these things done in a timely manner. So thank you for that.
And definitely not to mention that a number of the background check facilities and systems are closed down.
Yes.
So, Roxy, how about hearing from Charlotte?
Yes, Charlotte. Charlotte, are you there?
She's on mute. Gotta unmute her.
Okay, hold on.
There you go.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, hi everyone, perfect. Hello, so this is Charlotte, yes, Charlotte Lewis, and I am with the Department of Integration for FEMA. I am based in Portland, Oregon right now, but I am originally from Berkeley, California, actually. So that the state of California is very special to me. I have family here in California, and I really want to make sure that California gets the support that the state needs from me and, of course, from FEMA. Okay, sorry, my video quality isn't great, but okay, there's a few things I did want to talk about a little bit. I am working closely with Vance right now and his team to support figuring out a priority system for our response. And as Vance finished, he already mentioned, I guess, we have set a task force or a couple of different ones that focus on several different things, including communication, the homeless population, housing, of course, those services and that community, medical and health task force, and of course, that will all impact most of people who may be in the older population or who may have disabilities or underlying issues, and we're looking at all of that. We are also looking at volunteer agencies and philanthropy. And right now we have just sort of gotten moving with collecting from different organizations and getting a little more funding. We're trying to get more creative about problem solving in that area, and that's something that we will be talking about in future calls. So that is one issue with personal personal care, I will definitely bring that to the group, what we have been talking about, and see if they have other approaches or suggestions with that as well. Really, Vance has already explained most of what's going on in California, and I am here to just support the state, Vance's team, and figure out what we know to support the community in the best way possible right now. I'm predicting that this group is going to be able to do whatever we can to respond. Of course, things changing every day. Yep.
Okay, thank you, Charlotte. Any questions for Charlotte? That's *9 on your phone or click raise your hand. Well, I see none, Charlotte, but both you and Roxy, thank you. And anything you can do to keep us current by posting on this listserv would be greatly appreciated. So we look forward to continuing to communicate with you ongoing.
Thanks, so, June. This is Steve. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to move on to CFILC. Christina?
Hi, everyone. This is Christina from CFILC. I'm going to give an update from an independent living perspective and what some of the independent living centers have been experiencing, and then what we've also been working on in terms of the policy front related to COVID-19. So a couple of the things that I want to point out, some of you know that we contract with 10 different device lending demonstration centers to provide reuse and loaner durable medical equipment and assistive technology. Some of those are in operation and some of those are currently virtually semi-available, but you can understand that the impact of putting out loaner equipment right now is somewhat of a sanitary issue with some devices. So we've been very careful and strategic about what we will allow to be checked out on a short-term or long-term basis right now. But with that said, I think it's important to note that we've had a plethora of computer and device requests from around the state. So given that people are isolated in their own homes, that seems to be the biggest number of AT needs right now. Some of that includes other software specifically to use it. Amazingly, the folks that are requesting that equipment are both in their home and in skilled nursing facilities or boarding cares. So some of the requests have come from organizational providers like the MS Society and others that are trying to make sure that their customers and consumers are, you know, being given options to socialize in an isolated way from their beds. We're trying our best to fill those needs where possible. And Megan, who's on the phone with us, has really been stellar in helping out and making sure that we get those needs met when we can. In addition, we've had Pocket Talker requests for folks that are hard of hearing and are probably spending a lot of time watching TV and want to hear it. So they're requesting Pocket Talkers and probably using, you know, like we are, Zoom or Skype to communicate with their family. The other request that came in, and I expect these to sort of increase, is that as folks are limited in the number of doctor's appointments and medical appointments that they can have that are not related to COVID-19, there are more and more durable medical equipment requests that are going to come in. So those are usually, you know, devices such as wheelchairs, walkers, or canes that independent living centers and the contracted device lending libraries take in, and we refer to them as reuse items and then put them back out to the community and don't expect to see them back. Oftentimes, CFILC and the independent living centers do this during wildfires, and usually our batch of equipment goes substantially down, and then we start collecting through donations from the community and such, and DME providers that go out of business and are looking to volunteer or donate it. Mm-hmm. So yesterday we received a request from a young man and his mother down in Los Angeles County that was in dire need of a Hoyer lift. So we were able to find a Hoyer lift in Los Angeles County for the family. We actually have an independent living center director going to pick it up in one part of LA and drive it to another part of LA to get to the family. Some of you know that CFILC a few years ago established the Richard DeVelder Disaster Relief Fund. A Hoyer lift cannot be, has a sling on it, for those of you who know, and is a sanitary sort of issue sometimes if there's any type of bodily fluids on it. So we are using the Richard DeVelder Disaster Relief Fund to purchase the sanitary supplies needed to make it quality for the person in need of it. So we're happy to have those funds available. We take in donations to replenish that fund, and we obviously use it when people have no other means of being able to fulfill their DME and assistive technology needs during a disaster, which this counts as for us. In addition, I don't know how many of you know that we have a statewide digital access project program, but that is by far certainly our most popular program right now. We have been providing low-cost internet options for people with disabilities across the state for about 8 years now. And we've successfully gotten people connected with low-cost internet in over, 3,500 homes now. That program's phone has been ringing off the hook. So we have been assisting people and making sure that they're not upsold, that they're getting the internet access they need. And I'm also bringing it up because while some of you might not be familiar with the Frontier Wi-Fi company, if you are familiar with Frontier or know of them, they cover different geographic pockets of California. And through our grant program that supports us doing these Wi-Fi low-cost connections, if we get somebody who lives in a frontier geographic area that is subscribing to the internet through the, basically, if you live in a frontier geographic area, whether you subscribe to the Frontier low-cost program or another low-cost program within that frontier geographic area, we will send you a free Chromebook. So that's important to know. People can't get devices, but if they don't have internet and they live in a frontier area, whether they adopt what we call subscriber adopt frontier, as long as you're in a geographic frontier area, we can send you, or Frontier will send you, a free Chromebook. So I wanted to mention that. And for those of you who are not familiar with it, again, it's the digitalaccessproject.org. And our staff is bilingual and can help you out with that program. So in addition to the caregiving and personal assistance services that has been one of the priority needs, food and nutrition resources is another. So we've been working with Port Light Strategies to make sure that the centers for independent living in California that are going without or don't have as much food and nutrition resources in their community are getting funding from Port Light to give food and nutrition. One of the areas that we did a match up this morning was in Humboldt, Del Norte, and I'm looking for my catchment map, Trinity County. They were having food resource shortage issues. So Port Light is supporting efforts in that community right now with Tri-County Independent Living through their executive director. And we're touching bases with our other independent living center members to see if food shortages is an issue in their community. I know Freed is on the phone, but they've done an amazing job as always, and they are actually delivering the food themselves to make sure that consumers are getting what they need in their community. We'll continue to work on food. The one other interesting difference in this disaster is that we've had a number of counties say that distilled water access is an issue. So getting distilled water for CO2 machines and CPAPs has been a challenge. And I've had my staff looking at YouTube videos and determining whether or not they're fully accessible videos that we can advertise and teach people how to make their own distilled water. It is an option for those that have the availability and ability to make that. If you, any of you know of YouTube videos that are accessible, captioned and audio described, and have some great tips during a disaster, please send them to me so we can broadcast them. And then I wanna get into the caregiving stuff. So while we are hearing that current IHSS workers are somewhat not as reliable as they have been previously, and some have contracted COVID-19 and are really concerned about not getting their paychecks and therefore want to continue working, that's obviously one issue. But we also have a fear factor among consumers and caregivers and making sure that they don't get COVID-19 and therefore wanting to shelter in place and not necessarily have anybody come in or go outside of the home. We've also had situations where I think we've handled one particular situation in the southern part of the state where a landlord had told folks in an affordable apartment complex that they may not have their caregivers come into the building because that's a part of their shelter in place policy. So we did get housing and the public authority, and we've resolved that issue. So statewide, some of the IHSS stuff that we've been working on and have been successful either in getting or are currently still working on is one, I mentioned earlier that backup registries through public authorities is a challenge. Currently, we believe that 16 out of 58 counties in California have backup registries. Some of the independent living centers also have backup registries. Personal assistance services is a core service of independent living centers, but many of them offer that in a variety of different ways, and it's not always just through a registry or even in a registry format. There are a few centers in California that have an online service called Quick Match. There are six of them that use that, and they have been successful in being able to give backup caregiving services through matches of Quick Match. I'm going to meet with them on Friday to talk about ways to expand that and some of the lessons learned on that. I'm going to invite June to join that call. Quick Match was created by in collaboration with the Marin Center for Independent Living, where my husband is, and they are willing to give a short-term period of free service to agencies that want to use Quick Match during this time to make sure the caregiving needs are met. So I think while information is coming out extremely fast from the state, it's somewhat been hard to keep up with. And I'm trying to post it on CFILC's social media websites when it does come out. But I think some of you probably know that we've gotten the overtime rules for personal assistance. Right now there's the, you cannot work more than 90 days during a time period if you're 90 hours during a work week if you're an IHSS provider. We have gotten that currently waived. That was a big win. We also were able to, going back in my notes, we were also able to get the 1135 application into the feds to provide some additional IHSS relief to our state. And there were about 11 of us across the country who got that waiver approved earlier this week. We also got a 90-day waiver on reassessments. So anybody who was scheduled to have an IHSS or a Medicaid reassessment during this time has a 90-day waiver. We are still working to get EVV postponed in counties where it has not rolled out. Sorry, my dog. As you can see, he's fighting with me as I'm giving this presentation. And
say EVV means electronic
visit verification. Sorry. Thank you, June. And we are trying to get, in addition to the 90-day waiver for reassessments to be virtual, we are also trying to get the state to do a waiver or to do virtual assessments in the first place, not send social workers out and put people at risk in person. And then the other piece that we're looking at is getting the state to eliminate the tier one level of criminal backgrounds that prevent people with some sort of, I can't remember the full list, but like shoplifting and crimes that aren't necessarily, you know, putting lives at risk in a position to be eligible to be an IHSS worker right now and to waive the background checks for the tier one level IHSS providers. So I'm happy to take any questions. I know that was a ton of information, and literally I'm gonna go from this call to another state call with Department of Social Services and some of our other IHSS advocacy and lobby friends.
Thank you. Just raise your hand or *9 on your phone to raise your hand. Christina, well, we wait for your questions. That was a lot. Now, which, you know, we can spend our entire day on social media. What is the best source of information from CFILC into the one social media site? And secondly, on your digital remote access project, or whatever you call it, digital access project, are you doing the same with Verizon and some of the other telecom companies to do what you did for with Chromebooks and that kind of thing? Because there's a huge need out here for connectivity.
Yeah, great questions, June. So the work that we do with the Digital Access Project is funded by the California Emerging Technologies Fund. And there have historically been a number of telecom companies that are interested and not interested in offering low-cost broadband. And so it's been an evolution over the last 8 years of which companies are willing to make those offers. And currently, you know, some of the big name companies that have low cost broadband that often don't broadcast it publicly because they're in the business to make money, not, you know, lose money or offer to folks that are low income, are Comcast, Spectrum, Charter, however you call to refer to it these days, Frontier, AT&T, and then there's some less popular companies that we go to if we have to, but don't have as high of service as some of the commercial companies do. So those four companies, Spectrum and Charter, same company, Frontier, AT&T, and Comcast, those are the four companies that we tend to do connections with the most. And again, anybody who lives in a Frontier geographic area, whether you subscribe to Frontier or not, you would get a Chromebook if you were subscribing to a service in that geographic area. So Comcast has been doing this the longest out of the four, and the California Emerging Technologies Fund has done a tremendous amount of advocacy over the years to get other telecom communications companies to follow suit and also make offers available. And prior to this administration, we were working very hard to get the FCC to make some standardization around qualifying internet, which we believe at CFILC should be considered a utility.
And your best social media site for us to track what you're doing?
Yes, thank you. So my communications director, unfortunately, she left me right before COVID-19. So I'm in search of somebody new, and I'm trying to fill that with some staff behind me. I would say go to CFILC's Facebook page first. I'm trying to, depending on how many times I don't get stopped in a day, post on CF's Facebook page first and then CF's Twitter page second.
Okay, we do have a question from TCIL. Go ahead.
Hi, Christina. This is Anissa. I did have a question about the quick match. That is specifically for IHSS PSAs, correct?
So quick match is a software system, and it is an online software system that makes it much easier to navigate and connect with a PA that fits your needs. Some independent living centers and organizations across the country who are using it or have used it, use it to fill IHSS providers as well as out-of-pocket providers. MCIL has annual membership subscriptions on it, so it gets customized for your specific areas, but of course you have to feed the personal assistant information into it. But it really is helpful when folks need PAs during off business hours or during the weekends and can sort of make those matches themselves and make those contacts without having to wait for an agency to open between business hours.
Now, I do have another question to that. So if, like an example, if TCIL were to have Quick Match, right, do we disclose that we're not liable for, for that PA, for that PSA?
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily make you the employer of record. Some public authorities have asked MCIL if they could use it for the county. You decide what you want to do at your center. MCIL is not the employer of record. They're simply using it as a matching tool, and they make it very clear that they're not the employer of record.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Fiona.
Hi, Christina. This is Fiona.
Hi.
I just had a question about the Frontier Chromebook situation. Mm-hmm. How does one apply for that if one wants one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if there's two ways, and it's going to sound kind of funny the first way I'm going to say, but you'd be surprised how many people do it this way.
Yeah.
Online, like if you're trying to get people online, how are they going to apply online, right? But it really happens. So we see that most people are using their mobile devices to do it. And they go onto our website, digitalaccessproject.org, and they fill out the quick survey. It's like six questions, basically, to make sure you're qualified. You're a person with a disability, you're low income, and you have an address with your name attached to it, essentially. And even then, we have some ways to work around that. And then that triggers our staff at CFILC to make a phone call with you or to text with you. We use a Zingle texting system to also make it easier for folks that don't like to do that stuff over the phone to do it through text messaging. It does require that you show some proof that you are low income, and each of the companies that I referred to earlier do have different qualifications. CFILC advocated and was successful in getting AT&T, as an example, to make one of the qualifications recipient of SSI. Most of the other telecoms did not have that at first, but one of the ways that CalFresh being accessible for all of us now that are on SSI is that CalFresh was an original requirement to show that you're low income. So now it's made it easier for people with disabilities for any of the companies. So you can do it online and Concepcion will call you back, or you can do it by calling our Digital Access Project line. And I'm going to pull it up right now. You could also call 1-800-390-2699. And I do have a TTY number if anybody needs that. 1-800-900-0706.
Okay, thank you. We've got one more question from Brian, and we have 15 minutes left, and we have quite a few more people to hear from. So, Brian, over to you.
This is Brian from Freed in Grass Valley. Christina and actually everybody, I've been trying to, because as you may know, our catchment area is mostly rural and there is a large older adult population. And my concern is many older adults, either they don't want to use mobile devices or be on the internet. And so their only connection to the outside world may be through radio. And what I've been trying to do is get on the radio. I'd like to do it twice a day to check in and see how people are doing and what their needs are, and if need be, refer them to services. And also I'm trying to create kind of a lighthearted, you know, humorous kind of space for people to share their stories so that, you know, there'll be some kind of relief. And I've made some contacts with my local radio stations here, but I'm just having a lot of difficulty trying to get on the air. The best they're giving me right now is PSAs, which are almost useless in terms of what I'm trying to accomplish. But in any case, I wonder if there's any, is there anybody doing anything to try to reach people that aren't on the internet through radio? And if so, what's happening? Over.
You know, Brian, this is Christina. I think that's a great question, and I'm an avid NPR listener. I hear most of my news that way. And I've not heard about anybody so far, but we've got a wonderful group of people here that have said that they're doing any advocacy to get time on the radio. But I certainly think that that's a good idea. And I out of all of the radio stations, you know, NPR has done some around disability and older adults with COVID-19 stuff, but I've not seen anything else. Maybe others have.
Yeah, Brian, I wanted to just add, when you communicate with these folks, you know, CMS has issued waivers that reimburse healthcare for phone calls. You know, we hear everything about, well, connect by telemedicine and you could talk to your provider and see them. What lagged behind was the ability, if people can't do that, to at least do that by phone. So that is a funded option now, and I don't think a lot of people know that. So as you pursue your radio connectivity, you may want to share that with people who most will need that information.
And Brian, I just want to say that Jacob Lesner Buxton down at ILRC, he is connected to a Bay Area radio station, and I think he knows of some others too. And maybe if you guys collectively got together to discuss this, that might also be worth some time and energy. The other thing I was going to say that I think is a real opportunity for independent living centers is, because telehealth is become such a topic of conversation, and seniors and people with disabilities sometimes don't know how to navigate those systems, to doing three-way calls and doing some independent living skills training to teach folks how to make it happen on their own. Oh,
good. Thank you. We're trying to reach out to our consumers, but my concern was those that are not consumers, that are isolated due to not a lack of internet connectivity or just not wanting to be. My own father, he's 86. He just started using a microwave just a few years ago. So he didn't even want to use, and he does not have internet. So I know there's a lot of people like my father that are resisting that technology for whatever reason. So, which yep. isolates them even more during this time. Over.
Yeah, I can't get my Nana to use anything besides her flip phone.
So thanks to both of you. We're gonna move on now. Is Sarah or Lewis still on the phone regarding Listos? Nope, because he lost them. So Debbie, over to you regarding 2DEFY updates.
There isn't a huge amount to report in on. Before COVID hit really hard, we were mostly involved in working with the legislative staff of Senator Oh, God, it's been so long, you know. It seems like it's been months.
Senator Dodd?
Yeah, no, not Dodd.
Not Strickland.
From Orinda. Anyhow.
Yeah, I know.
The author of AB 801 is a bill that would provide backup power to people on a medical baseline. And we've developed through working with a lot of different folks, consensus about amendments that we would like to see in that proposed bill. And the senator and his staff have been very positive about that. And we're engaged in working with them on that, and then all this hit.
Senator Glazer, I think. Glazer?
Glazer, thank you. Thank you. And so basically, I've been in contact with a staff member, and it's still on their radar, but you know, they're gonna get back in touch with us when this is, you know, something that they can pay attention to. So that's where things stand with that.
So it's kind of, there being a little bit of a hiatus right now, standstill, as we have to refocus energies on COVID.
Right.
Any questions for Debbie? Okay, moving on to probably something else that's on pause. Master plan for aging, emergency content. And Anna, are you on the phone? Anna?
Hi, you guys, it's Anna. I just quickly will say that all master plan on aging activities have been suspended at this time. So, you know, just like most things in our lives at the moment, we don't know when those will restart, but the assumption is once shelter in place orders have been lifted and we can get back to congregating, then those activities are expected to pick back up.
Anna, can you brief us at all in terms of the nature of the emergency content in there?
Of the what?
Of the emergency related content that you worked on in, I think it's in the LTSS part.
Oh gosh, thank you. So I just, so you guys know, I got really sick for a couple weeks, and I'm still trying to remember what I was doing before that. and I didn't prepare necessarily for that, but basically we looked through many recommendations that came in to the Together We Engage website from individuals and stakeholders organizations, compiled them into a set of recommendations. Some of the emergency preparedness recommendations fit into LTSS, such as backup caregivers, right, during disasters and emergencies. And others we punted on to the Master Plan Advisory Committee, because our, with the LTSS subcommittee, we're very focused on just LTSS. And some of the recommendations for emergency preparedness were kind of fell a little bit outside LTSS. So that will go to the Stakeholder Advisory Committee that's looking at the broader issues other than just LTSS. But there are a set of recommendations. June, you provided a lot of very comprehensive recommendations that basically I just cut and paste into our LTSS recommendations, or those that are being put forward to the larger stakeholder group.
Okay, well, we're glad you're back, and probably have a lot of catch up to do, so thanks. Legislative updates, I don't know.
June?
Yeah.
I have something in this area that might be of interest to folks, and I'm happy to forward it. Today at from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m., the SCAN Foundation is hosting, in collaboration with the Assembly Aging and Long-Term Care Committee, a webinar on COVID-19 and obviously LTSS. So I feel like it's a little bit of current and a little bit of what we're talking about under the master plan. So I'm happy to post that on this listserv if folks would like to join. We do have a former director, consumer perspective, Paula Margenson, will be joining the webinar to talk about Southern California, specifically Orange County's area. And then my husband, Eli, from Marin Center for Independent Living, will be talking about the Marin Aging and Disability Resource Center and how that infrastructure has really helped foster some of the work that's gone into helping out during the COVID-19 efforts.
That'd be great. And yeah, if you could post that right away so people want to can listen in. And when you're in the call, if you could help us to know how we can access that via archive later for those of us who already have three conflicts during that time frame.
Absolutely. And I'll do it right now so I don't forget or get interrupted.
Yeah. But also ask about the archive so we can, for those of us who can't make it. So, well, thank you. This has been a really rich call. I learned a lot, at least I did. Any other issues before we adjourn?
I just want to share that we CFILC is working with Southern California Edison and PG&E to also put a webinar on in early April on the differences in how each of those companies is rolling out their SGIC program. So more to come on that as well.
Great. Okay, well, and our last topic call was on SCHIP, so any of you missed that, that is available on the DAR website, and that is that's at disabilitydisasteraccess.org. Quite a mouthful. disabilitydisasteraccess.org. And you can access the recording from that call that Debbie led and really did a great briefing job on everything we need to know about SCHIP that we didn't know and need to continue to watch and help.
That was super helpful. Thank you, Deborah. I listened to part of it yesterday and I'm planning to finish it up today.
Yeah, that's really great to hear that they actually are talking to you. That's good.
So thank you all. And we'll re-adjourn again on the 9th of April. Not sure what the topic will be. Maybe it'll be that call you mentioned, Christina, with the two utilities or something else. So
great.
Stay tuned. And we'll look forward to all those things that you all are posting on the listserv today.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks again. Bye. Bye-bye.